Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Monday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column sometime in the last 15 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on December 11th of 2011 under the headline, "The Port Orford Meteorite. Was it all a big hoax?" Somewhere in the thickly forested coast range within a few dozen miles of the town of Port Orford, there's a chunk of intergalactic rock worth well over $300 million. Or maybe there isn't. Maybe it's just all an epic hoax. A giant, huge, audacious, practical joke that had the sharpest scientific minds in the world bamboozled for well over a century. Nobody knows for sure which of those two things the Port Orford meteorite is, but almost everybody agrees it's a great story. So, here it is. The story starts in the year 1856, when a U.S. government geologist named Dr. John Evans found himself on what would shortly become the south coast of Oregon, doing some field work, surveying the territory that would shortly become the newest state. That's Dr. Evans, as in medical doctor. We're used to seeing the title of doctor used for scientists to acknowledge their credentials as PhDs in whatever they specialize in this case it would be geology, but Evans was not a geologist. How he got involved with geology was by earning international acclaim during an expedition to the Midwest in 1848, during the course of which he happened to be the guy to discover some very important dinosaur bones. This seems to have been enough to change his career plans. Chances are he welcomed the opportunity. Medicine in the 1840s, not the prestige gig we think of today. Don't get me wrong, it was better than being a logger or a sailor, but being a scientist was better. This lack of academic preparation for his profession is surely why, when the good doctor encountered a strange-looking boulder buried up to its shoulders in a hillside somewhere between Umatilla and Coquille Rivers, he didn't recognize it as anything much more significant than just a pretty rock. Evans chipped off a chunk and moved on, leaving behind him a 2,200-pound meteorite made of an extraordinarily rare material called palisite. Palisite is the substance that forms right at the borderline between the nickel iron core and the rocky mantle of a small planet or large asteroid. When that heavenly body is blown apart by a meteor strike or whatever, the chunks that result can be rock, metals, or palisite, and palisite is by far the rarest of the three. Well, upon Evans' return to Washington, professional geologists with more formal training recognized the sample, and it started a sensation. Congress moved quickly to authorize another expedition to retrieve the rock. But not quickly enough. Before anything could be done, the American Civil War broke out, and the day after the war started, Evans died of pneumonia. By the time other geologists and explorers had made it out to the site again, dozens of years had passed and no one could find a trace of the meteorite. Evans had said before he died that it was on a grassy slope of, quote, Bald Mountain, a mountain about 40 miles from what's now Port Orford, which rises above the surrounding hills and is easily seen from the ocean. How Evans would know this last bit is unclear. Well, no soap. It turns out there are a number of mountains that could have been temporarily deforested in 1856 and could easily have been perceived as higher than the others. The entire area is also prone to landslides, so it's entirely possible that the whole grassy slope slid down into a creek bed with the meteorite at the bottom of tons of earth. And, well, there's another possibility, too. It turns out the sample Evans brought back with him was nearly identical, possibly completely identical, to the material found in a meteorite in Chile in 1820. In fact, scientific examination of the sample in the 1990s has convinced the majority of scientists that it's from the Chilean strike. Samples of this palisite meteorite were relatively easy to come by in the mid-1850s, and it turned out that Dr. Evans was in serious financial trouble at the time. Could it be that he had a sample of that rare material in his pocket when he left? Could he have then pretended to find it in the most remote and trackless part of the Oregon wilderness, hoping to generate some buzz and inspire financial backers to step forward and solve his problem by commissioning him to go back and spend unaccountable years looking for it, drawing a healthy salary the whole time and staying a continent away from his creditors? Could it be that the Port Orford meteorite was one of the greatest scientific hoaxes of all time? Perhaps. But hold on. There's yet another twist. After a 1937 article in the Portland Morning Oregonian, a miner named Bob Harrison stepped forward and claimed the meteorite was on his nickel mining claim in the Salmon Mountains. He said the debris field from the meteorite's landing had effectively salted his mine with chunks of nickel and he'd been making a living scrounging them up. Talk being cheap, a scientist from the U.S. Geological Survey asked him to send along a sample for testing. He did. It checked out. Bob Harrison's nickel chunks were indeed of extraterrestrial origin. But could they have been from a palisade strike? Now very interested, federal scientists asked him to send more. Instead, he dropped out of sight. Given the dollar value of the meteorite if it's found, this tends to argue against Harrison's claim to be in possession of it. After all, what miner has ever failed to cash in mineral wealth found on his claim? So that's where we stand. We have no real idea if the meteorite is real or not. If it is real, we don't really know if it's buried at the bottom of a landslide under 80 feet of silty clay loam or parked in a forest someplace waiting for someone to stumble across it. Someone like you, perhaps. Or, let's be realistic here, maybe someone like the Tooth Fairy or the Easter Bunny. Key sources in this story include works by J.D. Adams, Jeff LaLand, Ruby L. Hult, and the Oregon Encyclopedia. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 700 stories originally created and published as newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com, and other Offbeat Oregon goodies include an active Facebook page, a ton of historic photos, and a bunch more stuff, including visuals for today's show and full citations to sources, all available through our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. We are, by the way, also members of a community of Oregon creators called the Oregon Voices Network, which you can find at OregonVoices.net. It's a hub page that links to Marcus Axford's Welcome to Oregon podcast and the weekly Influential Oregonian podcast that Marcus MCs with me and archaeologist David Winkler, and usually a special guest as well, plus a bunch of other cool stuff like Discord servers and a Facebook page. So yeah, check it out. It's a cool community and I'm proud to be part of it. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now!